Good evening. Good to have everybody here tonight, as Thomas said. The ship is listing a little bit to the port side, I guess.
Or starboard, as it were.
That's okay. That's fine. Would also mention that Family Heritage Alliance is one of the clients that our company is privileged to serve, and they're having a thing in Rapid City. Actually, it's an invitation for all churches in the Black Hills region to pray for rain tonight. And so there's a lot of churches in the metro area and throughout the sphere of influence with the Family Heritage Alliance, where they're praying for rain. And we had some good rain in Spearfish last night. I don't know if any of y'all had rain out at your place or not, but it's a little bit dry out there, and so they were having a call for action for folks to pray for rain. So in your prayers tonight before you go to bed or in the morning, just kind of send one up to the good Lord about rain. And maybe you already are. I'm guessing that you probably already are. Oh, there you go. Yeah. That is a great idea. Yes, wonderful. That's another one. All right. I think we got that covered. We got that surrounded. All right. Life Stew is our class that we've been doing this summer during Wednesday nights. We're looking at an ingredient a week and mixing it all together, and what comes out is something that tastes good and it's pleasing to the senses, and it represents an abundant life that we would have as Christians in our walk together. And so, we've talked about a few ingredients already. We've talked about goal setting. We've talked about taking action. And last week, we talked about gratitude. So, did anybody get a gratitude journal? Did anybody keep a gratitude journal last week? And that, okay, here, a few shaking heads. Yes, awesome. Let me ask you this question. How did it feel after you wrote down three or four or five things that you were thankful for each day? Did it change your outlook, or did you feel good about it? Did you go back and look at them?
Mm-hmm.
Right. Sure. So Cora said it changes, you know, when you go back and look at all the things that God has blessed you with, it just really does kind of reframe you a little bit and make you more grateful than ever before. Yes, go ahead, Marilyn. That's right. Yep. Exactly. It's impossible to be angry and grateful at the same time, so to speak. So, right. That's a very, very astute observation. And that's why gratitude is a very useful tool in reframing ourselves. If we remember, a lot of times we get in angry and frustrated and we just feel so low and just desperate, and it's hard for us to all of a sudden remember to be grateful for some things and sort of reframe things. It doesn't necessarily make problems go away or solve problems, but it does give you a better frame of mind to approach what you have to do next so that you don't make rash decisions, and we talked some about that last week. So gratitude, I always say, is like the salt of the stew. It loses itself in everything else and brings out the best in all of the other ingredients. It's a savory thing, so it's an important part of it. Tonight we're going to talk about energy. And I was telling Kathy on the way over here, this is like of all of them, this is one I thought I was going to struggle with the most. Because you're right there on the cusp of New Ageism, you know, and I'm not a New Age kind of person. You know, when you talk about energy and chi and karma and Gaia and all that stuff. I'm not to that point where I'm talking about any of that. I mean, there's things that happen, of course, that I can't explain. But I just believe the relationship that God has to his creation, some of those New Age ideas kind of go against that. Whereas, you know, God is everything you see. God is mountains, God is streams, God is water, God is marijuana, God is anything. And it makes it automatically good. I don't make that leap. So I want to have that disclaimer out here tonight before we go. So hopefully this is going to make sense and I will be able to be a tool, a useful tool for God tonight as we go through this. When we talked about goals, it's the process by which we find our direction to change to better behavior. When we talked about action, it's letting the Spirit guide us without fear. It's that 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, go. Do it before, you know, the fleshly side of you talks you out of it. You have 5 seconds. You just have 5 seconds when you know the Spirit is saying, do this. 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, go. Gratitude is the power to change our attitude and perspective. And energy is really the fuel that feeds us. So there's two kinds of energy, and I'm going to try to go through this as quickly as possible. There's physical energy, and then there is spiritual energy. Science has done a good job with dissecting physical energy. And in the process, many physicists have come up against this idea of spiritual energy and just aren't really sure what to do with it. The Bible deals a lot with spiritual energy. It's almost like a science textbook when you look at your spiritual energy as described by the Bible. But it also talks a lot about physical energy. And so we're going to unpack this a little bit about physical energy is literally the capacity to do work, the action of moving something against a force. So when the energy is sufficient, the intended motion will overcome the opposition to the resistant forces to that motion. Like if I decide that I want to walk across the room here, my intended motion will overcome the forces that are against me. And granted, they're probably not a lot. But if the wind was blowing 50 miles an hour in my face, that would be a force to contend with. But that's what energy is. When it's sufficient, the energy to move forward. It's kinetic energy, as science describes it, released. And then it's recycled as stored energy, and the energy of the resistant forces, which is stored as, is recycled as kinetic energy. It's a beautiful thing, really. And it's part of the reason why energy is so hard to define, because it's a lot like the wind. We know it's there. We see the effects of the wind, but we can't see it. You feel it. Energy is the same way. We feel it, and what's worse, we feel it when it's not there. But energy is all around us. All created things depend on energy, whether it's kinetic energy, potential energy, thermal energy, or whatever it is. That's what it is. I want you to look at your hand for a minute and just ponder this. If you had a microscope that could take you super, super close up to your hand, you would find that your hand is made up of molecules. And each one of those molecules is made up of atoms. And even with the atoms, there's space in between the protons and neutrons and electrons. And there might even be subatomic particles mixed in there. We're still trying to discover things like that. One of the things they're working on up in Leeds at the Homestake Lab. But when you think about the essence of that, the building blocks that make up your hand are no different than the air that surrounds your fingers. It's just how that energy is compacted and distributed. And it's the way that God made us. But they're the same building blocks that build the universe. And this is the energy that God spoke into existence at creation. Now here's a really cool thought. So back in 1820, about 200 years ago almost, there was a man named Hubert Spencer. And I don't know if any of you used Google back in probably the middle part of May, early part of May. You know how Google sometimes does those little artwork things. And if you ever notice a change, right? And you click on it and it tells you the story about somebody. Well, they had Herbert Spencer on there one day. Herbert Spencer was a scientist back, almost 200 years ago. He was the one that really coined the phrase survival of the fittest. which we've all heard that phrase. One of the things that Spencer did in his early studies of physics was he described that there were five scientific principles, that we use to study the universe. And these were time, force, energy, space, and matter. Those are the five things that he came up with in his studies. Now, here's the cool thing. God, circa 8,000 years ago, through Moses, wrote down this in Genesis 1:1. The very first words written in the Bible. In the beginning, God created the heavens and the earth. If you unpack this, what Moses, through the inspiration of God, and the hand of Moses wrote, was exactly 8,000 years or so later, exactly what Herbert Spencer came up with. Because when you unpack it and you look at it, in the beginning is time. God is the force. Created was the energy. The heavens is the space, and the earth is the matter. It's exactly the same. Now, that's kind of proof of spiritual things of the Bible right there in a physical sense. That's the way God made them. And he knew the answer to the question 8,000 years before Herbert Spencer did. And his Spencer studies have formed the framework for modern physics to this day. But all of his principles right there in Genesis chapter 1:1, all led by God's creative energy force. Now, the grand inspiration is this, that God was the energy. God was the force that really created the energy which built all of creation. You and me, mountains, buildings, chairs, your iPad, movies, clouds, rain, all of this is the same energy, just put into different forms. And here's the cool thing about it. It's never changed since day one of Genesis chapter 1:1. James 1:17 says, every good thing given and every perfect gift is from above, coming down from the Father of lights, with whom there's no variation of shadow or shifting. We know that Jesus is the same today, yesterday, and tomorrow. God never changes. This is one of those principles that once that physical energy was created, it cannot be destroyed. There's the same amount of physical energy in the world today as there was when the world was created. I don't know if you knew that or not. But it's an important thing to think of. Today, physicists call it the first law of thermodynamics, or the conservation of energy. Energy just moves from one form into form, out of form, and into a different form. And it's never destroyed, never created. There's additional energy has never been created. It's the same as it always was. One example of this, by the way, would be, you're pretty familiar with, I'm sure, the water cycle, where rain falls on the earth, it evaporates into water vapor, it rises, forms clouds, and rains back down. It's a never-ending cycle. Or another way of thinking about it is the sun creates the energy that we have to grow food. Food is stored energy, and when we eat it, it's changed into electromagnetic and heat energy, which allows our bodies to be powered. That energy goes back into the surrounding environment to be recycled once again. And it goes on and on and on and on. And there's a beautiful balance in all of that physical energy that's out there. And the beautiful thing about it is the creation itself, the Bible tells us, speaks to this mystery. Like, for example, animal and human life reflect God's creative energy. Job 12:7-10. It says, ask the animals, they will teach you. Or the birds of the air, they will tell you. Or speak to the earth and it will teach you. Or let the fish of the sea inform you. Which of these does not know that the hand of the Lord has done this? In his hand is the life of every creature and the breath of all mankind. That's a really cool thought about how creation is doing exactly what it's supposed to do and doesn't argue with God. It just does what it naturally needs to do. It speaks to this energy force, this conservation of energy. The skies point to God's glory. Psalm 19:1-4, the heavens declare the glory of God. The skies proclaim the work of his hands. Day after day they pour forth speech. Night after night they display knowledge. There's no speech or language where their voice is not heard. It's universal. Their voice goes out into all of the earth, their words to the end of the world. And then creation was really God's very first missionary, and Paul writes in Romans 1:20, ever since the creation of the world, God's eternal power, or the word energeia, his energy, his created and divine nature, invisible though they are, remember, like the wind, we can't really see it, have been understood and seen through the things he has made. So they are without excuse. As human beings, we're without excuse because God's creation was the great missionary to tell about his works and his love and who he is. This is all part of the physical energy. Now let's move on to the second, which is the spiritual energy. And this is the most important of all of the energies, of the two. And we're going to tell you why tonight. And this is where I want you to kind of camp out and think. Think about this and how the world, I believe, has this backwards. They have it backwards. They try to trick the physical energy into fulfilling our spiritual needs, and it leaves us with New Year's resolutions that we drop. It leaves us with fad dieting. It leaves us with all kinds of issues, stress, and problems, when really it's the spiritual energy first. And one of the ways that we know this is important, in Matthew 22, 35 through 40, the Pharisees and the Sadducees are trying to trick Jesus, and one of them finally ends up confronting Jesus one-on-one. He was a lawyer, and he asked Jesus a question and tested him. He says, "Teacher, what's the greatest commandment in the law?" And he said to him, Jesus said, "You shall love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your soul, and with all your mind. This is the greatest and foremost commandment." We all know this. The second is like it, right? "You shall love your neighbor as yourself." One, on these two commandments depend the whole law and the prophets. Everything that was created depends on this. All right? And the force that Jesus is referring to is love. That's the essence of the force of spiritual energy. The capacity to love God and others. And to move forward against resistance. We're going to talk about that in a minute. But spiritual energy is the capacity to love God and others as we love ourselves. So, it's really what it is. It's the essence of our being that was created in the image of God back in Genesis. You know, let's make man in our image. This is the essence of that image. He gave us this spiritual energy that only man has, only mankind. It's a spiritual energy that has the power to sustain us. This is the great thing about it. It has the power to sustain us abundantly. Abundantly. And I love that word because too much we walk around with scarcity as Christians. But if we walk around in abundance, we will draw people to us. But our spiritual energy will sustain us abundantly while we walk through the creation. It is love, and that powers our walk. 1 John 4:7-8. "Beloved, let us love one another, for love is from God, and everyone who loves is born of God and knows God. The one who does not love does not know God, for God is love." Now, this concept is really at the heart of the mighty power of the Lord. When we agape, which is the word for love here, not the Hollywood love, don't confuse this with emotion. We're not talking about emotion. We're talking about the sacrificing nature of love, putting others' interests before yourself, agape. When we do that, we tap into a power source which is consistently being created. And this is the beautiful part of spiritual energy, because physical energy is constant. It cannot be created or destroyed. Spiritual energy, to those that love God, is constantly being created, which is a great concept when it comes to being abundant. There's a never-ending source of this. "The one who does not love does not know God, for God is love." God is this force, this spiritual energy, because he is love itself. The most important source of power for our lives today. Now, Colossians 1:27-29. Again, Paul talking about how this important source of spiritual energy is now open to the whole world. And what a magnificent, world-changing, history-making thing this is. Not just a secret for the Jewish nation anymore. Paul realizes that unleashing this abundant, never-ending, limitless power supply to the entire population of the world is a pretty big deal. Paul knows that. And he says, to them God has chosen to make known among the Gentiles the glorious riches of this mystery, which is Christ in you, the hope of glory. He's the one we proclaim, admonishing and teaching everyone with all wisdom, so that we may present everyone fully mature in Christ. And to this end, I strenuously contend all the energy Christ so powerfully works in me. And that word energy, the Greek word is energeion. Paul was conscious of God's energy at work in him. And powerfully, Christ so powerfully works in me is the Greek word endoumene, which is power like dynamite. Huge, huge amounts of energy. Paul understood this is like lighting the world on fire, like dynamite. I mean, this is going to explode big time on the globe, on a global stage, when people all over the world can love one another and give the credit to God. That's a huge, huge thing. So that's a lot of energy to be unleashed. We watched a documentary last night on Mount St. Helens. I'm not sure why, but I just found it on YouTube. And the force that was released in that explosion was immense. But it doesn't even compare to this, because all of that energy was just recycled back into other forms, right? This energy is constantly being created and built upon and getting bigger and greater all the time. In Ephesians 1, 18 through 19, I pray that the eyes of your heart may be enlightened in order that you may know the hope to which he has called you, the riches of his glorious inheritance in his holy people, and his incomparably great power for us who believe. That power is the same as the mighty strength he exerted when he raised Christ from the dead and seated him at his right hand in the heavenly realms. This is an amazing statement. That power, or that mighty strength, that kratos, the mighty deed of raising Jesus, is the same power, or the energeo, which we say would be energy in Greek, that he exerted when he raised Christ from the dead. This is the energy of God, and it's saying that it's the same for us. Now, does that mean I'm going to go raise somebody from the dead? No. But I have that image of God in me that has that same abundant source of energy that, if I believed enough, maybe I could move that mountain. Maybe I could raise that person from the dead, because the spiritual energy overrides everything. Mighty strength, the kratos, the exerted, the energeo, the energy put forward to work. And then one other thing in this passage in Ephesians, which is important. His incomparably great power for us who believe. Okay? Now remember on Sunday morning when Thomas was talking to us and he said, Christianity isn't for everyone, it's only for those who believe. You and I both know people of the world who are not Christians, but they're good people. They're good people and they do good works. But this word believe states an action of giving credit to God, which is an important difference. So this incomparably great power for us who are willing to give the credit to God. Not everybody in the world that does good is willing to give the credit to God. But that's who Paul says this power is for. For those willing to give the credit to God. How many times did Jesus do amazing things and gave the glory to God when he did it? When we have amazing things happen in our lives, do we believe? Do we pestueo, which is to give credit to God? Do we do that? That's a key to unlocking the power of the spiritual energy that he's given us. Now remember that we said earlier that energy is the action of moving against the forces of something else. And it's really the same with spiritual energy, because there is an opposing force at work. So follow me, if you will, back to Genesis 3. Before Genesis 3, and that's the famous chapter where we find the fall of man. Before the fall of man, things were good. Things were bliss. There was the physical world and the energy that existed and the spiritual energy that God had created in Adam and Eve that was just perfectly in sync with one another. And then evil appeared on the scene and Satan came in and deceived Eve and then Adam and said, hey, you two can do a better job of how to direct that spiritual energy than God can. And they bought into it. And then what happened? There was a division in that energy. And since then, there's been a division. There's been a light and a darkness, a spiritual energy that acts on its own apart from God. Darkness, the powers of darkness. And the spiritual energy that is in unison with the circuitry that God built into creation and gives us an abundant life. It's two different ones. We can plug into that circuit panel that God's built for us and we get the most possible out of life. It's abundant. Or we use that spiritual energy apart from God and bad things happen. Paul puts it pretty well in Ephesians 6, 10 through 12. He says, finally, be strong in the Lord and his mighty power. Put on the full armor of God so that you can take your stand against the devil's schemes. For our struggle is not against flesh and blood. It isn't against the physical energy that God created at creation. But our struggle is against the rulers, against the authorities, against the powers of the dark world, and against the spiritual forces of evil in the heavenly realms. So as we're trying to use our spiritual energy to move forward, there's an opposing force that's trying to keep us from moving forward. There's an old proverb, a Native American proverb that maybe some of you are probably familiar with. The Cherokee and Lakota tribes told it quite often. It goes like this. One evening, an elderly Cherokee brave told his grandson about a battle that was going on inside people. And he said, my son, the battle is between two wolves inside us all. One is evil, anger, jealousy, sorrow, regret, greed, arrogance, self-pity, guilt, resentment, inferiority, lies, false pride, superiority, and ego. The other wolf is good. It is joy. It's peace, love, hope, serenity, humility, kindness, benevolence, empathy, generosity, truth, compassion, and faith. And the young grandchild thought about it for a minute, and then he said, Grandpa, which wolf will win? And the old Cherokee simply replied, the one that you feed. The one that you feed will win. The one that you nourish, the one that you provide the energy to, will win. And here's the thing. Every single one of us in this room has the ability to choose which wolf we will feed, which one will receive the nourishment, the energy that it needs to grow and to thrive. Some of us try to choose both. It's kind of like trying to focus your eye on two things at once. You know, they say the eye is the window to the soul. And I think there's a lot of truth in that. We're going to talk about that in about 2 minutes. But if you try to focus on two things, you know, it's funny how it is when you look at a picture of the eye, sometimes it makes us feel a little bit weird, right? Like somebody's watching us. It's just a picture, but it does leave us with that feeling. And then when I show you this next one, you're going to feel really kind of crazy. But this is exactly what we do when we try to feed both wolves, when we try to do both at the same time. We end up like this guy, right? It's uncomfortable to look at that, right? But this is the way God has to look at us a lot. And I'm really grateful that he's loving enough to be patient with me while I'm cross-eyed like that, trying to feed both wolves, trying to focus on two things at once. You know, Ephesians 1:18 spoke of the eyes of your heart. We talked about that a minute ago, and the eye is the window of the soul. And our eyes are at the intersection, and this is a really cool thought, okay? Think about your eye for a minute. Your eye is really at the intersection. It's ground zero. It's where The primary meeting point comes between the physical world and the competing forces of the spiritual world. Matthew 6:22-23, the eye is the lamp of the body. If your eyes are healthy, your whole body will be full of light. If your eyes are unhealthy, your whole body will be full of darkness. If then the light within you is darkness, how great is that darkness? With your eyes, you take in the things that are going to feed one of those wolves. And you have to be aware of what you're doing. And what ends up happening is if you take in darkness, darkness is going to be reflected back out in your eyes. I had a conversation with a friend of mine who's selling his house this week. And he had an offer come in just out of the blue from an interest from a guy that owns businesses in Mexico and also has a business here in the Black Hills. And he said, I would really like to relocate my partner up here. And so the two of them came to look at the house. And the man that had called met my friend and his wife. And he was a very nice man, very professional man. And the friend of his business partner that was going to live there, was also there with him. And my friend was very unsure about this other guy. And later his wife said, I just didn't like the look in his eye. Even though they were going to give him a cash offer for the house, they turned it down. Because she just felt uncomfortable. You can just look in somebody's eyes and they reflect back either darkness or light. Isn't it funny how that is? I'm not as good at this as some other people are. You know, I see it in their eyes. Your eye is at that intersection of the physical and the spiritual. So the darkness can be reflected back, but healthy eyes are eyes of single focus. Unhealthy eyes are the crossed eyes we showed you. One eye on God and one eye on worldly pleasures, and they're out of focus. And you can't focus on two things at once. And if you read a little bit further in Matthew 6:24, it says you cannot serve two masters. It's like, so what he's basically saying about the eyes, you can't focus your eyes on two places at once. That is unhealthy. Neither can you serve two masters. So let's look at those two forms of spiritual energy. We'll unpack these and then we'll wrap it up. Darkness and light. The forces of darkness and the forces of light. Let's understand the forces of darkness. Now, yeah, this is kind of the tough one. Let's look at the characteristics of the spiritual forces of darkness. Now remember, what I am talking about here, when God created us in His image, He gave us this spiritual energy. But when we try to use that spiritual energy apart from God, it is a force of darkness. That's what we're talking about here. So what does it lead to? Number one, it leads to destructive habits, destructive things. It actually tends to destroy what was created. It works against the grain. That's what happens with the forces of darkness. It's very, very draining, all right? It tends to destroy us from the inside with stress, with worry, sleeplessness, insomnia. Those are the things that cause us to have heart attacks because the spiritual energy is so drained from us that our physical energy can't survive. It's draining. The other thing about the forces of darkness, there are laws to limit this behavior. Go to any city, any county, any state, any country, and you will find laws that limit the force of darkness. Obviously, people don't always obey them, and they'll cross the line, and then they'll be up for punishment. And all these are characteristics of the forces of darkness. So I don't know about you, but I don't want to feed that wolf. I don't want to nourish the forces of darkness. I want to be an example of somebody whose eyes reflect back the glory of God and not a dark, dark, great darkness as Matthew talked about. 2 Peter 2:4-10 is pretty scary stuff, and I wasn't sure that I was going to read it. But it says, if God did not spare angels when they sinned, but sent them to hell, putting them in chains of darkness to be held for judgment, if He didn't spare the ancient world when He brought the flood on its ungodly people, if He condemned the cities of Sodom and Gomorrah, if He rescued Lot, who was distressed by the depraved conduct of the lawless, for that righteous man living among them was tormented in his righteous soul. If this is so, then the Lord knows how to rescue the godly from trials and to hold the unrighteous for punishment on the day of judgment. This is especially true of those who follow the corrupt desire of the flesh and despise authority. Using his God-created energy apart from him is what he's saying. All right. Any quick questions or observations? Okay. Let's talk about something a little more positive. Let's talk about the spiritual energy that is in line with God's purposes, or the forces of light. I love this. There is no law, no limit. It's complete, total freedom. That's the funny thing about spiritual energy, isn't it? Like that. When it's godly spiritual energy, there's no limitations. How many of you can quote Galatians 5, 22 and 23? But the fruit of the Spirit is love, joy, peace, patience, kindness, goodness, gentleness, faithfulness, and self-control. And what's the next part? Against such things, there is no law. There doesn't have to be a law that says you can only help the elderly across the street three times today. If you do it four, we're putting you in jail. There doesn't have to be a law like that. There doesn't have to be a law limiting how many gifts you can give people or how much time you freely devote to their cause. There is no law against how gentle you can be. There's no law against how forthright you can be. There's no law against how honest you can be. There's no law against how helpful you decide to be. This is a powerful thing about spiritual energy. Godly spiritual energy is constantly being created and added to, and it's abundant and it never ends. And there's no limit and no law. And you have it inside each and every one of us. We just have to understand that and live like that and let it just soak into us. Yes, Thomas, thank you.
I went right to 1 Timothy 1:8, which reads, "Now that we know that," talk about the teaching of the law, "and now we know that the law is good if one uses it lawfully, understanding this, that the law is not for a righteous man, but for the unrighteous."
I actually had that down next, but thank you for bringing that up.
I
know. That's right. So who are the laws written for? For the ones that use the forces of spiritual darkness, not for the ones that follow in godly light. All right, so there's no limits. The second thing about the spiritual energy that's the forces of light are it reigns supreme. This is a cool thing too when you think about it. This is the part of that's in you that always wins. You ever seen the cathedrals or heard the cathedral song that they sing? I've read the back of the book and we win. Sometimes as Christians in our walk, it doesn't seem like we're winning. But at the end of time, at the end of days, and even every single day, if you look hard enough, Christians win. And it isn't our own. It's the energy that God gave us. It's giving that credit, that belief that God gave it to us that makes it work. Imagine what it'll be like in heaven where you have infinite love of God. And that's what powers us for all of eternity. This is the spiritual energy that reigns above any created energy. Revelation 22:5, it says, "There will be no more night, no more darkness. They will not need the light of a lamp. You will not need the created sun. For the Lord God will give them all the light that they need, and they will reign forever and ever." That light is the word that we use for photon or energy, and it reigns forever and ever and ever. It is supreme. All right. Another thing about the forces of light, it's the image of God reflected in us. We as humans will take part of us, that created image of God, and will exist in only that eternal energy, spiritual force state as we're merged on our way into heaven, out of this body. Revelation 21:1 says this. It says, "I saw a new heaven and a new earth." The first one, first heaven and earth, had passed away, and there was no longer any sea. There was no longer any created force, no longer any creation. "And I heard a loud voice from the throne saying, 'Look, God's dwelling place is now among the people.'" We're merged. We're merged. "And he will dwell with them." With them, side by side. "They will be his people, and God himself will be with them and be their God. He will wipe every tear from their eyes." There will be no more death, no mourning or crying or pain. Why? Because the old order of things has passed away. The physical energy is done. The forces of darkness are done. Now it's the forces of light, the spiritual energy that we have in us, and God will be reflected in us. And the last thing here is more is being created. We're constantly being recreated, unlike the physical universe. When we expend our spiritual energy to show love for another person, guess what? We end up with more spiritual energy. Isn't that cool? And the energy from the forces of darkness gets weaker. How many of you know that song you sang maybe in VBS when you were a kid? Love is something if you give it away. How does that end? What's the last line? You'll end up having more. That's a true statement. The more energy that you expend in love, the more energy you get back. That's created energy from God the Father. It's constantly renewing us, Paul says. We are being recreated, 2 Corinthians 4:16. Therefore, he says, don't lose heart in the midst of all of the bad stuff that you see around you. Never lose heart. You will be given a full amount in return. It will be packed down, shaken together, and spilling over into your lap. It's going to be more what you get back. That's more created energy from God than what you gave out. The way you treat others is the way you will be treated. You treat others with goodness and light, and the darkness diminishes. That dark wolf goes away the more you feed the wolf of light. All right, so when we look at ourselves, we ask this big question. Why do I feel physically tired seemingly all the time? Why am I weary? I'm stressed. I'm out of breath. I feel old. I'm sore. I would like more energy, more vitality. Give me some caffeine. Give me a 5-hour energy drink, something. Now, these all trick the brain into thinking that you're activated and more active. But you know what? The effects of that, they don't last, right? And in fact, when they wear off, sometimes you're in worse shape than you were when you started. Albert Einstein had this really famous quote, and he said, you know, you can't solve problems by using the same kind of thinking we used when we created them, which I think is very true. In fact, the Bible says exactly the same thing. Consider your life and your situation. As I stand before you today, warts and all, I am a product of the decisions that I have made my entire life. Mentally, physically, spiritually, this is me. I have to own that. That's called confession. I confess to God that these were my decisions, for good, for bad. These were my decisions. On balance, maybe you're generally happy, or on balance, you may wish for something better. But it's probably safe to say that there's at least one area in your life that you might like to see a little bit of improvement. So when Albert Einstein says we can't create or solve a problem on the level in which it was created, Colossians 3 verse 2 said to this. This was the solution to the problem. Set your mind on things above, not on things that are on the earth. And he goes on to talk about other things related to this through verse 10, and have put the new self who is being renewed to a true knowledge according to the image of the one who created him. That new person is being recreated into a true knowledge according to the image of one who created him. It's right there. We set our sights on above. We set our sights on feeding the spiritual energy force of light. And then our physical well-being and our energy all falls into place when we do that. We're going to talk about some of those strategies here in just 2 minutes. So, and why is it so hard? So, let me go over some strategies and then we'll close. Using our spiritual energy, it fuels our physical energy. This is a key point, and we never can put this backwards. The world wants to put this backwards, and that's why we're frustrated with ourselves, as I mentioned before. Your spiritual energy, and I'm talking about here that God-fueled spiritual energy, okay? This is what gives us our fuel for our physical energy. This is the order in which it comes. Spiritual and then physical. despite all the countless hours of research that the world spends. I got this from the Navy. There's a chaplain service in the Navy that uses this to assess the spiritual fitness of their crew. And they have four categories, going from the green, which is being spiritually fit, all the way to the red, which is spiritually drained. And you can look at this and you can say, yeah, there's a lot of things in here that kind of relate to, and I know you can't really read it. But, you know, it's like losing purpose in life, somewhat engaged with family, difficulty forgiving myself, less respectful of others, all the way here to no reason to live. You're spiritually drained. That's the fitness when you need the most help. And their goal was to move people from the red to the green, or from all the way over to the green. Deb, did you have something? Oh, okay. And I can print this out for you later. I'm sorry that you can't read it here, but if you're interested, I can give you a copy of this. So where do you fall on this list? Some of you might be in the green already, and if you are, you'll probably want to stay there. If you're in the yellow, orange, or red, we want to move you to the green. And honestly, sometimes when we do, we change from one state to the other. We move back and forth in our spiritual fitness. But let's bring it home. When God created the universe, he did it exactly the way scientists would later come to describe it. Pretty amazing, huh? Number two, God had another form of energy before creation, and that was spiritual energy, or what we call agape love. The more you use it, the more you get back. It's in a constant state of creation and growth, and there's no need for any laws. Gravity, thermodynamics don't come into play, whatever. No laws needed to control it. Now, to solve the crisis of our personal energy shortage, we need to think on a higher level, and feed the need for spiritual energy first. And a byproduct is going to be a better balance in our physical energy needs. And by balance, really what I mean by this is more physical energy, or if your life situation simply doesn't always allow, at least if you're feeding that godly spiritual energy, you'll have a sense of well-being that I'm okay with who I am. And then you're able to walk completely with God. But over time, this spiritual fitness will work into your favor in all areas of your life. You have to fight the energy vampires. And here's some of them. We'll talk about these in the coming weeks. Overcommitment. Committing to way too many projects, spiritual works or things. Too much conversation, too. Foolish talk and joking and just talking too much is an energy vampire. Can just drain people. Arguments. These could be debates or just wrangling, mostly over things we can't even control. You know, like we see it in the news. That stuff is, it's really kind of pointless. And it just drains us. Or if we're arguing with people, it's draining. It's like too much time in the wrong company. When you think about it, you're the average of your five closest friends. Have you ever thought about that? So what you need to do is pay attention to who is in your company. One other thing, too, is the love of money and career, the love of worldly things. And this takes away our focus and makes us cross-eyed. So that can include a desire for my image, a desire for respectability. It can include a lot of those things. You know, look at me. I've got it all together. I'm perfect. And that's why, you know, I really appreciated some of the comments last week when Zollers came forward with their need. And there were several of you that said that was a really cool thing for them to do. I'm really proud of them for doing that. It took a lot of courage to do that. But that's part of this. That's a very, very important thing. The desire for image or respectability, even somewhat, it was overcome. So they didn't allow the energy vampire to continue to zap. Self-loathing, ungodly pursuits or ungodly entertainment, that's a big one. This is all about what our eyes take in and what our hands find to do. These are energy vampires. Self-loathing, I'm not good enough, I'm not smart enough, I think I'll go eat worms. You know what? Your identity is not tied to things of the earth. It's tied to your identity in Jesus. It rests in him. He said, you are good enough, and that's good enough for me. Should be good enough for all of us. Here's some things that I would like for you to do this week. Number one, find a daily place of calm. I have found this, and maybe some of you do this, and I know if you've got four kids at home and they're up at all hours of the day and the night, this can be a challenge, and that's okay. Find it if you can. Maybe it's in the middle of washing dishes. But I found this to be very instructive in my life. And what I mean alone, alone time. Feed the spiritual dog that is a force of light. Find 5 minutes each day you can depend on and look forward to. It's your time to be alone. Now use this time to nourish that spiritual energy. Find an activity that you know you'll stick with. If it's reading your Bible, if it's praying, if it's meditating, if it's all three of those, if it's rotating between those three, it doesn't matter. Find that activity in your place of calm each day. And if you miss a day, don't worry about it. Just pick it up when you can. Don't kill yourself over it. Just pick it up when you can. If you know that I'm going to be busy the next morning, then say to yourself, I better go to bed a little bit early so then I can plan on getting up a little early and still have my 5 minutes, my 10 minutes, my 15, or whatever it is for your place of calm each day. Scientists will tell you, psychologists specifically will tell you, that this kind of an activity, what it does to you, your brain, is it interrupts a daily cycle of stress and the distractions and all of those things that come into our life. Because if you just say, you know, I'm just going to wake up and the world is going to shower over me again and I'm full of stress and I don't know what to do next. But if you wake up in the morning and you know that you're going to have that 5 or 10 minutes of calm, it breaks the cycle of that stress. And stress is an energy vampire. Spiritual energy vampire. So by all means, find that. And if you have that, awesome. Awesome. Keep going. And here's another one. Seek encouragement at least once a week. The Bible talks a lot about assembling and getting together and being encouraged and encouragers in the Bible, all the way back to Jonathan's armor bearer in 1 Kings, all the way up to Barnabas in the New Testament, the journeys of Paul. Be with somebody who encourages you at least once a week. That could be coming to church on Sunday and coming to church with the attitude of, I'm serving today. I want to find somebody to encourage. I'm coming into this room with an idea of seeking out somebody that might need me today and giving the credit to God when good things happen. And then feeling good because you got more back than what you gave. Being around other believers and worshiping with them, it challenges us to strive to do what is good for each other and everyone else. That's out of 1 Thessalonians 5:15. It's an important concept for us when we get together. It's something that you can't say, well, I'll worship God in my own way on the golf course on Sunday morning. God cannot work in you the way He can when you're in a room with other Christians. It's just impossible. Now, anything's possible for God, of course. But for us as human beings, we have to place ourselves. It's our responsibility to put ourselves where God can do the most work. And if that's here, encouraging one another, that's an important thing for us to do. And you know what? Some days you come in and you need to be encouraged, and somebody will find you and encourage you. Or find an encouragement partner once a week. Meet with them and encourage one another. Share coffee. Have lunch with them. Psychologists say this actually breaks the weekly cycle that you get into with your meetings and commitments. And it reminds you of what's important. And we need that. We absolutely need that. Get moving. This is where we talked about action. 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, go. Opportunities for service abound. Take an envelope off of the random act of kindness before you leave tonight. That's one thing you could do right now. And then open it up, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, go. Make the decision. You're going to do it. You're going to do it. Spiritual fitness doesn't come to those who wait around complacently, expecting God to kind of turn up the flame. But it happens when we live out our love of Christ. James tells us, don't merely listen to the word, but do what it says. James 1:22. So somewhere in our lives, there's a person that needs our help, and we need to seek them, find out, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, go, help them. And the outcome will be good. Turn setbacks into renewed determination. Reframe. Turn a negative into a positive. This is where the gratitude exercises work. When something terrible, terrible, terrible is happening in your life and you can't figure it out and you're frustrated, stop, be grateful, and then continue. Reframe your brain and come back to it. We all have setbacks. Ask for forgiveness and forgive yourself, okay? You know, Peter denied the Lord 3 times, but Jesus gave him another job. right? Did not stop believing in him, did he? When Elijah showed cowardice after defeating the prophets of Baal, God gave him another job. He still had faith and confidence in him, turning a setback into something positive. Five, place your focus on God with your eyes. Feed that spiritual energy, taking in the things that are good. And this is out of the Bible too, Philippians 4:8-9. Finally, brethren, what does it say? To do with your eyes whatever is true, whatever is honorable, whatever is excellent, whatever is right, whatever is lovely, whatever is of good repute. If there's any excellence, anything worthy of praise, take it in. Take it in. Dwell. Think on these things. The things that you've learned and received and heard and seen in me, Paul says, practice those, and the God of peace will be with you. I would much rather be peace than stress, right? This is peace. Okay, and finally the last one, and we're going to talk about this more in coming weeks, but make time for rest and peace. And I love this thing that I read about how quickly we fall asleep is often a good gauge on how much we trust God. Do you ever think about that? Do you ever have trouble falling asleep because you got so much on your mind? Count your blessings instead of sheep, and then try to go to sleep. But it's often a gauge on how much we're trusting God that day. There was a guy that one time told me, he said, I work two shifts and I give God the third shift. I like that. He lets God just take that third shift while I'm asleep. He'll worry about those things and I'll pick him up the next day. He doesn't not trust God during the day, but God was powerful enough to handle everything while he was asleep. I love Mark chapter 4. We'll revisit this later, and we're almost done. Sorry that we're running over again. But this chapter talks a lot about faith. Now, there's a furious storm, and Jesus is in the boat with the disciples in Mark 4:38. And they're afraid because the boat's going to break up, and the waves are getting larger, and they can't believe it. And it's like, what's going to happen to us? And they turn to Jesus, and what is Jesus doing? He's sleeping. He's sleeping. But they wake him up. Now, Jesus wasn't upset because they woke him up. Why'd you wake me up? Man, I was having such a good dream. No, when he woke up, he questioned them and he said, why are you so afraid? Have you still no faith? The Son of Man is in the boat with you. You're going to be okay. Don't you believe it? The Son of Man is in your boat right now. It's going to be okay. It's going to be okay. Jesus could sleep and be at ease when everyone else was panicking because he had faith. The faith was the key to a good night's rest. Jesus often prayed when everyone else was sleeping. And Jesus often prayed when everyone else was asleep, which allowed him to sleep when everyone else was in panic. Which I thought was kind of a nice way of looking at it. Finally, our bodies are a temple. In 1 Corinthians 6:19-20, you know that your body is a temple of the Holy Spirit, which is where that spiritual energy lives. In the Holy Spirit who is in you, whom you've received from God. You're not your own. You were bought at a price. Therefore, honor God with your body. Honor your God with the things that you come in, that you feed the spiritual energy dog with, those good things. Honor that, and the rest will take care of itself. Energy is like the gravy in life's stew. It touches every other ingredient. And even by itself, it's pretty sweet. I loved my mom's gravy when she made beef stew. This is a very, very, very important concept, and I hope that maybe tonight we see this in a way that we can apply to our lives. And feed that spiritual energy that you need to put your life in balance physically. It's the only body you got to live in. It's the only place that your spirit can live. It's in your own body, so treat it like a temple. Next week, we're going to talk about time. It's so funny because you take this person and this person, they're totally different outcomes, but they each have the exact same amount of time every single day. What's the difference? What's the difference? Thank you for being so attentive. I'm again apologize for being over. Let's end with a prayer and then we'll be dismissed. Heavenly Father, we thank you so much for your creation. You're the master of the universe, the master of all that we see. And even before you created, you existed with Jesus in the Spirit, Lord. And we believe that you gave us that spiritual energy within us that we read about throughout the Bible. My prayer, Lord, is that we use the things that we've learned and the strategies that you've given us in your word to nourish that force of light, that spiritual energy that's within us, each and every day, so that we can reframe where we were at, we can take a deep breath, we can relax in your knowledge, we can sleep peacefully, and we can know that, yeah, we have you on our side, that we're going to win, and that we believe in you, we give you the credit for that. Lord, thank you for making us beautifully and wonderfully, and for giving us the Bible that just helps it make it so plain so we can understand how things work. Lord, I just pray that we're building something here that's good and it's fruitful and that we can share with others. And I pray these things through your Son Jesus' name. Amen. Thank you once again, and again apologize for going over.